Hi guys, Yannick Silver here, and welcome to another exciting call where I bring you some of the top business icons, thinkers, and thought leaders. And with me today is someone that I'm proud to call a friend, a drinking buddy, and probably one of the smartest entrepreneurial coaches that I've met. And his name is Cameron Harold, and if you haven't heard of him, he's at BackpocketCOO.com. The guy he was a former COO of 1-800-GOT-JUNK and took it from $2 million to $105 million in less than 6 years with no debt, no outside investors. And now he's been working his magic with other entrepreneurs. And the reason I asked Cameron to come on the call is I think he's got some really interesting insight for the entrepreneurs here about the four stages of this entrepreneurial roller coaster that all of us sort of go on that almost makes us feel like we're kind of going crazy, and our spouses or girlfriends or boyfriends or significant others and family have to deal with. And it's going to be a really interesting insight for you, and something probably that would even be worth sharing with the people close to you. So Cameron, are you with us?
I am. Thanks, Yannick.
All right. So maybe fill in a couple blanks for people on your history just real fast, and then we'll jump into this this roller coaster that you call.
Sure. I'm a serial entrepreneur. I've been in a lot of business ventures that I've started as early as when I was 21 years old. I had 12 full-time employees. But even prior to that, growing up as a child in grade school and high school, I was doing entrepreneurial ventures well past the normal, you know, newspaper routes and cutting grass. Obviously, I did those, but I was also paying for my own way through university by selling things door to door and running businesses. And so I kind of grew up being groomed as an entrepreneur. My father was an entrepreneur, and then both of my grandfathers were entrepreneurs, and both of my brother and sister also own companies. So I really grew up in a whole world of this entrepreneurial roller coaster, and was just exposed to it and lived it. And then in mid 1980s, 1986. I joined a company called College Pro Painters, and I opened up the West Coast of the United States for College Pro Painters. And at the time, the founder walked me through a concept that he called the transition curve, and that was what is now kind of this emotional roller coaster that I teach entrepreneurs. And it just showed me that we're normal as entrepreneurs to have these ups and downs. So College Pro Painters was a big part of my path. From there, I went on and I co-founded the franchise organization for Boyd Auto Body and Glass, which is a chain of auto body collision repair shops. I did that for 4.5 years and took that company public. Left there in 1998, and I was president of a private currency company, a barter exchange that we built up, and sold that company for $64 million Canadian. And then in 2000, I joined my best friend and came on his team as the chief operating officer of a company called 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And when I joined that company, there were 12 full-time employees, including the call center. There were 12 franchisees. And when I left 6.5 years later, we had just about 3,100 employees system-wide and 330 franchises operating in 4 countries and 46 states and 9 provinces. So we'd built that company out as well.
That's awesome.
And now what I do is I mentor entrepreneurs around the world, and I do speaking events in countries all over the world.
Right, and you're one of my business coaches, and you know what you're going to be listening to here, guys, is something that's incredibly valuable. Even though this is a free call, I promise you, if we probably should have charged for it because you might even value it more. But you know, turn off your email, turn off your Twitter, turn off Facebook, anything that you know beeps, pings, whatever it takes, because this is going to be some really important stuff that I promise is going to be extremely relevant to anyone who's an entrepreneur. And I actually turned off the Caps Canadians hockey game to see them go for win number 15. So you know this is important stuff. All right, so let's maybe jump in here, Cameron. With you know, what are the? Well, I guess actually before we get there, I feel like as all us entrepreneurs, we go through these ups and downs all the time. And I think what you said at the beginning was that it's normal, and that's incredibly important to realize. That's typical for an entrepreneur to feel like one day that we're on top of the world, next day that shit, something's gonna, you know, crash and burn around us, and we just can't get around it. But you know, you've identified these four distinct emotional stages, I guess.
Yeah.
Want to talk about those?
Sure. And even just before I give you the emotional stages, I just want just to do a quick check kind of around everyone on the call. I'd like you just to ask yourself these questions and keep count of how many of these traits that I say, keep count of how many of these traits you find yourself having at times in running your business. So what I want you to do is see if you can get to five of these being true for you. Just count on your fingers. So number one, do you often feel that you are filled with energy? So if that's true, just kind of put your thumb up. That's number one. Number two, do you ever feel flooded with ideas? Do you feel driven? Can you get restless? Are you unable to keep still? And I'm sure there's people on the call now that on those first five things have got all five fingers being counted already. Do you often feel like you're working on little sleep? Can you often get euphoric? Do you get easily irritated by minor obstacles? Do you burn out periodically? Do you act out sexually? It's actually a trait, believe it or not. Do you feel persecuted by those who don't accept your vision of what you're building? And I'll bet you that anyone who's on the call right now that's an entrepreneur has at least said yes to five of those things. What's interesting is those are not traits of entrepreneurs. Those are actually traits of a clinical diagnosis for bipolar disorder. So, and I mean, you're laughing nervously, and so do I when I hear that. Because Yannick, how many of those did you have?
I kind of stopped counting.
That's right.
Better that way.
Yeah. So the reality is, entrepreneurs will actually identify with almost every one of those traits, and those are the clinical diagnosed traits for bipolar disorder. What's interesting is bipolar disorder has been nicknamed the CEO disease. Bipolar disorder is what we know as manic depression. So entrepreneurs are kind of hardwired to be partially, if not clinically diagnosed, manic depressive. I'm going to read you a quick quote that Marc Andreessen, who is one of the founders of Netscape, wrote. And he said, first and foremost, a startup puts you on an emotional roller coaster unlike anything you've ever experienced. You flip rapidly from day to day, one where you're euphorically convinced you're going to own the world, to a day in which doom seems only weeks away and you feel completely ruined. And back again, over and over and over again. And I'm talking about what happens to stable entrepreneurs. There's so much uncertainty and so much risk around practically everything you're doing, and the level of stress that you have of running your own company will magnify the incredible highs and unbelievable lows at whiplash speed and huge magnitude. And if that sounds like fun, become an entrepreneur. That was one of the founders of Netscape. Interestingly enough, Marc Andreessen, Jim Barksdale and Jim Clark, the three founders of Netscape, are all clinically diagnosed as bipolar. So is Ted Turner. So is Francis Ford Coppola. So was Bill Gross from Idea Lab. Steve Jobs has been described as hypomanic and unable to think outside the box because he doesn't even see the box. And he's also been described as quick to fly off the handle emotionally because of the stress. So the reality is that kind of if we look at all of the entrepreneurs, both successful and even iconic, as we go through these roller coaster rides, the key is to, first off, understand it and accept it and realize that maybe we're not actually crazy. Maybe this is part of being an entrepreneur, and maybe it's part of why we're good. So one of the things that I learned back in the 80s when my mentor walked me through this was entrepreneurs need to leverage our manic periods. We also need to understand the stress that we have and why it's okay to have days when we don't feel like getting out of bed, when we kind of call our team up at the office and pretend we're working off-site and the reality is we haven't been able to get out of bed in the morning because of the stress or the fear or the anxiety. And the reality is the pressure that we have of entrepreneurs, of the promises we've made and the people we're employing and the suppliers and customers we're working with and trying to meet payroll and the vision for something big and bigger that we're building, those are a lot of pressures that a normal employee who gets a paycheck just doesn't really have. So that should hopefully frame this kind of roller coaster ride that we go through as entrepreneurs. The big difference between a physical roller coaster that you can ride at a theme park and the roller coaster that we ride as entrepreneurs is we can't get off this roller coaster. At the theme park, you kind of go around once, and you have to get off so the next group can get on. As an entrepreneur, our roller coaster ride goes up and down, up and down, up and down. sometimes to very, very high highs and other times to very, very low lows, other times not so high and not so low, but we definitely don't have a kind of normal day or a normal week. So that's
I think the overall curve. I think that really sets the tone for what we're going to talk about. And, you know, once again, it kind of gives people, and myself included, just a little bit of, hey, everything's okay. That's normal. That's par for the course.
Yeah. So I always use the analogy of this physical roller coaster and get people to remember the feelings that you had when you were riding a roller coaster. And I actually did a blog post the other day on my website of a guy riding a roller coaster, and they were trying to ask him some basic questions that he was able to answer while he was sitting on the ground. And while he was riding the roller coaster, he was completely unable to answer any of the questions. It's a hilarious video. But the stage one, if you think about riding up a roller coaster ride, as you're getting towards the top of that roller coaster, you feel that nervous energy and that excitement and that enthusiasm. Even though you don't know what's coming yet, you haven't quite seen how big that first drop is going to be, but you're just pretty damn excited being up there. Well, that stage of the business roller coaster is what we call uninformed optimism. And that first stage is that adrenaline rush, that nervous energy and that excitement. It's what you felt when you were starting your business. It's what you felt when you land that big contract or when a customer comes along and gives you huge praise and hires you to do something for them. It's the adrenaline rush you feel when you hire a fantastic new employee or when you purchase advertising that you're really hoping is going to do well. Those are the feelings of uninformed optimism. But something changes, and all of a sudden you kind of go over top of the roller coaster and you look down a little bit, and you get a little bit more information, and you get a little bit more pessimistic. That information is called kind of uninformed pessimism, where you've got a little bit more information than you had before. You're starting to get some fear and some nervousness, maybe a little bit of frustration. Maybe you're even kind of thinking you might even want to get off the roller coaster. But that second stage of informed pessimism, you now know for sure that something is slightly different than it was at the stage before. And if you're not careful at informed pessimism, you're going to continue to go down that curve. And when you go down that curve, you hit a stage called crisis of meaning. Crisis of meaning is at the very bottom of the roller coaster. Kind of on a physical roller coaster, it's where you would be convinced that your roller coaster car is going to go screaming through the bottom of the ride and crash and burn at the bottom. And you need help to get through that crisis of meaning in your business. And that's when you need to turn to mentors and turn to friends and, you know, get some exercise. And I'll go through some things to help you get through that crisis of meaning stage. But the reality is we're all going to get there at times. Sometimes it's going to be for a long period of time. Other times it'll be just for a matter of hours or days. And you'll have small little curves along the big macro roller coaster curve as well. And then as you kind of go around the bottom of a physical roller coaster, you start to go back up the next hill. And all of a sudden you feel the chain click into place and you feel yourself being pulled back up the hill. Well, that's when you know you're okay. That's the informed optimism stage. That's when you know that everything's going to work out. You have enough proof and data to tell you that your business is going to be okay, and you start being able to have that sigh of relief that you're going to be, you know, you're going to be all right, and you're not dying, or you're not, you know, your business isn't collapsing, or that you have started to figure out how to run the business to this next stage that you're at. But just before that stage, before that chain kind of clicks in on the physical roller coaster, you hit a spot that we call hopeful realization. That's kind of like the little engine that could. The problem with that stage is a lot of entrepreneurs, when they get there, think everything's okay, but the reality is they're not quite perfect yet. It's almost like if you were having problems with your marriage and you went to a marriage counselor for the first time, and you walked into a marriage counselor and said, you know, my wife's a bitch, and your wife said, my husband's an ass, and you go for one session of marriage counseling and you leave the session and you go, we're good now. Well, no, you're not good yet. You probably have to go to marriage counseling for months and months, if not years, until you're so sick of seeing the marriage counselor. Then you know for sure that you're good. And what happens to a lot of entrepreneurs is we come through this tough time, we land a big account, or we hire a great person, or we have some small success, and because we're wound up with optimism, which makes us good as an entrepreneur, we think everything's okay, and we kind of unleash back up the curve too early. So it's important to not feel like everything's perfect again until you know for sure that it is. So those are kind of the defined points of the curve: the uninformed optimism, informed pessimism, the crisis of meaning, hopeful realization, and then informed optimism. Now, what's important to recognize is that each stage of the curve is going to happen, and also each stage of the curve has its good parts and its bad parts. I'll give you an example of that. If you're at informed optimism and you've got all this nervous and good energy, there's some things that you should not be doing at that stage, and there's things that you should be doing at that stage.
Which stage is this, Cameron? Is this stage one, uninformed optimism, or informed?
Yeah, stage one, uninformed optimism.
Okay, that's what we're talking about right now.
Yeah, so if you're now back at stage one, uninformed optimism, you know, where you've got that really good nervous energy and you're having fun and you're fully enthusiastic, what are some of the things that you would do at that stage?
Oh, I mean, you want to talk about your idea to anyone and everyone. You want to just, I mean, you're on top of the world there. You think that's going to be the next billion-dollar idea.
Right. So you're going to talk to the media. You're going to talk to the press. You're going to stand up in front of your clients. You're going to pull your employees in and have meetings with them and get everybody jazzed up and excited about it. Now, at the same time, if you're in that feeling of uninformed optimism, what should you not be doing?
Oh, I don't know. You probably don't want to be spending money.
Bingo. Yeah, you don't want to be spending money. You don't want to be doing any business planning. You don't want to be working on your budget. You don't want to be making buying decisions or hiring decisions. You don't want to be doing your accounting or bookkeeping. Anything that involves thinking and systems and money, you want to try to avoid.
So no strategic planning then.
Yeah, exactly, strategic planning. If you're in that wound-up energy phase, you want to avoid anything that requires careful thinking. And it's funny, when you show this guy, or when I showed this guy on my blog riding the roller coaster, and they asked him a very simple question about a baseball game that they just explained to him a minute before when he was calm, he was completely unable to answer the question. and the reality is he's unable to answer it because his brain is misfiring because of the mania that he's under. Well, it's the same within business. You have to be very careful. You don't want to be making promises when you're in this period of mania. But you definitely want to leverage it. You know, I loved being in my manic phases because I would stand in front of employees. I could go and just wander around the office and talk to people, and I'd get them jazzed up just because I was so excited. So it's important to recognize that at that stage, it can be both good and bad. And then if you go around a little bit over to stage two, to the informed pessimism, again, it's very similar. At informed pessimism, it can be very good. It can also be very bad. When you're at informed pessimism, that's exactly when you should be doing your planning. It's exactly when you should be doing your strategic planning and strategic thinking and your budgeting, because you're going to be more realistic. If you're buying advertising, you don't want to be buying advertising when you're manic and uninformed. You want to be buying advertising when you're a little bit pessimistic, when you have more information, because then you're going to be making calculated decisions. It's impossible to make a calculated decision when you're manic and at that uninformed optimism phase. Now, when you're at informed pessimism, you also don't want to do some certain things. You don't want to be talking to the media. You don't want to be doing speaking events. Now, if you're in that more cautiously optimistic phase, you probably don't want to be standing talking to the media at that point because you're not going to get them excited. They'll find little chinks in your armor. Yesterday I went and had lunch with a woman who's running for our politics. She's running for the Canadian equivalent of a governor. And in our talk, she was talking about the fact that, well, I may not win this first round, but I'm going to try really hard. And I was like, well, wait a second. Don't ever say that again. Like, how could you possibly be running for this position and sit in she was trying to get me to do some fundraising for her. Like, how are you going to build my confidence in you if you're telling me that you're kind of nervous? I don't want to know you're kind of nervous. And that unfortunately, is what an entrepreneur has to bear that. You know, as entrepreneurs, anybody who's on this call, we can't sit in front of our employees and tell them that we're kind of nervous. We can't sit in front of our employees and say we're scared or that we're lacking a little bit of confidence. We need to do that with our groups, you know, our forums that we get involved with, or our deep friends who are confidants, or other entrepreneurs that we can talk to, or our mentors or coaches. Those are people you can open up to. But you can't do that with your employees. Your employees need to feel that unwavering trust You know, that's one of the things that is so strong with Steve Jobs, is he literally believes he can change the world. And he never, ever wavers from that. He believes that he'll develop and build these insanely great products, and everyone around him believes him. If Steve Jobs stopped believing, Apple would no longer be successful.
Okay, well, let me stop you right there for one sec, yeah. Cameron, and get a little clarification then, because, all right, if we're in that informed optimistic stage, you know, stage two, informed pessimism, and we're still talking to our employees and still trying to motivate them, how do we conjure up that, I guess, that unbridled enthusiasm or confidence?
Red Bull and espresso. it sounds funny, but whenever I do even calls like this, I go through my little checklist. Have I gone to the washroom? Yep. Did I get my water? Yep. Do I need espresso? And I actually did that check just before our call, and I'm like, nope, I'm already manic. I don't need espresso. We used to keep Red Bull in our offices, and Brian and I would routinely grab a glass of it if we needed it. You know, we'd get exercise. We'd go for a run, but we would just recognize where our mood was, and we'd try to bring it up if we needed to a little bit.
Okay, because obviously, you know, we can't wait for to be in stage one to talk to the media or recruit employees or anything like that, so you got to almost force yourself into that stage a little bit.
Yeah, you've got to force yourself into it, and you'll see athletes do that, where they'll kind of pump themselves up and get themselves all jazzed up and then pop out into a group, or athletes before a race or before, you know, an Olympic event, they'll have their headphones on and they'll listen to some song that'll just pump them up and get their energy going. What you're doing there is trying to artificially get the mania, artificially get the energy going, because you know you want to leverage that energy. So this is partially, you want to get yourself in that stage. It's also partially to understand when you're in that stage, how do you avoid it or how do you leverage it?
All right, so that's stage two. Is there anything else in there, or should we move on to stage three?
Yeah, not really. So from stage two, the key point to remember is you're getting a little bit nervous, you're getting a little bit pessimistic. As you're gaining information, sometimes stress can take over and start bringing you down that curve. And you'll start feeling things. I went to the doctor about 8-9 years ago, and when I was talking to the doctor, he asked me how things were going, and I said, it's pretty good. Everything's good. I've got this little, I don't know what it is, this taste in the back of my neck. It feels like I can taste tinfoil. It feels like I'm tasting or chewing on aluminum foil. And he kind of looked at me and went, really? I'm like, yeah, you know how if you, like, pop a piece of gum in your mouth and you forgot to take the tinfoil wrapper off? I said, that's what I can kind of taste in the back. He's like, okay. He goes, what's happening in your life? I started explaining all these different events that were happening. My mom was sick with cancer, and I'd just quit my job, and I'd moving up to Canada, and my wife was pregnant, and we just bought a house. And I think I had 8 of the 10 most stressful events happening simultaneously. And he kind of looked at me, and he went, wow. He said, you've got a lot of stress going on in your life. I was like, no, nothing. I said, I'm good. I'm handling it all. I said, other than this weird metallic taste in the back of my neck. And he said, yeah, but he said, do you know that metallic taste is actually a chemical secretion induced by stress? He said, you're actually at the stage where you're tasting stress. I actually was at 490 out of 500 points. And if you hit 150 points, you have I think it's a 90% chance of a heart attack. I was so far past that zone, I was physically tasting a chemical secretion. So what I'm trying to get people to understand now is when you're sliding down the curve, start to recognize it. It's okay, it's natural, but then you need to try to work through it. And the one way you need to work through it is not hide out, not be by yourself. That's when it starts to get a little bit worse. You need to open up a little bit to your closest confidants. You need to turn to some mentors. You need to turn to your priest or your rabbi, whatever, and start thinking about explaining to them how you're feeling. Ask yourself, what are the things that you do when you're at those most stressful periods? Make a list together, because you're not going to be thinking clearly when you're that stressed. Make a list now when you're feeling good of all the things you do to get through stressful times. Maybe it's go for a walk or go for a run. Maybe it's get some exercise. Maybe it's go fly fishing. Maybe it's go cycling. Maybe it's have a drink. Have one drink, not 8 drinks. What are some of the things you do?
The drinking certainly is one of them, but usually it doesn't turn into 8, but it doesn't end with 1. But the more productive actually has been journal writing.
Perfect.
And it's actually, there's a great book that I just read. I don't know if you're still on your business book diet or not, but it's called 59 Seconds, and by its professor Richard Weissman out of the UK. And I've been journaling on and off for a long time, actually. And in here, he's done a bunch of research on only peer-reviewed scientific studies. And in there, journal writing was right up there on how to deal with how to make you happier, essentially. And there's a couple different things. Thinking about what you're actually grateful for was one of them. So writing down everything you're grateful for. So that's something that I've done every time that I've come across times of turmoil, is literally sitting down and writing down everything that I'm grateful for. And it starts with, you know, even little things like a roof over your head and, you know, the kids that love you regardless and so on and so forth. And then thinking about the progress that you've made instead of thinking about all the crap that you haven't done or what you haven't accomplished, which only leads to a spiral of more impending doom. Thinking about where you've come from and all your, even just progress instead of perfection. And that's been really, really powerful, just journaling that. And then even just journaling how you're feeling, believe it or not. And he talks about this in here in a peer-reviewed study, which writing actually gives you a storyline. And instead of us kind of going through it in our own heads, which becomes a big jumbled mess and then gets pushed down, I can't have a negative thought, so you push it down and you ignore it or whatever the case is. But when you journal about something, it creates a storyline, which is a beginning, middle, and end, and it helps you process it.
Yeah, no, I think that's a huge point. I did a journal about 2.5 years ago, right after I left 1-800-GOT-JUNK and just before I started Backpocket COO. And every day for 20 minutes for a period of 3 months, I just lay in my hammock and wrote notes. And part of it was just flushing stuff out. And yeah, it was very powerful. Another thing that you touched on is a concept that I learned at a program called Strategic Coach. And I think you're now taking this this program as well, Yannick.
Yep.
And they talked about getting caught in the gap. And the gap being that as entrepreneurs, we're always setting goals for ourselves, which is awesome, and we should. But we're always focusing on the future. And the trap that we can get caught in, or the gap that we can get caught in, is that we only are happy when we get to our goal. Well, the reality is, by the time we get to our goal, we've already set new goals for the next quarter or the next year. So unless we look in the rearview mirror once in a while and see how far we've just come, we're never actually going to be happy, because we're going to be continually stretching for that next goal. We're going to be continually caught in that gap. And as an entrepreneur, one of the things they taught us was at the end of every week, just write a list of all the things that you got accomplished this past week that was good. Just quickly take 5 minutes at the end of the week and write down the stuff that you got done that you're happy about. And those are the kinds of things that are going to help you to get through this crisis of meaning, because they're going to help remove a little bit of the stress of the day-to-day of being an entrepreneur. So that's huge stuff for sure. One of the keys that we talked to our franchisees in all the franchising companies I've helped build was it's really important to communicate to other franchisees how you're feeling. It's okay to phone them up and say, I feel like I'm going towards this crisis of meaning stage. The key is don't wait until you get there. You know, if you wait until you get to that crisis of meaning stage, what ends up happening is that you end up, it's too late for anybody to really help you. You need to know the feeling that you're having and start communicating that feeling to others, and realize that every entrepreneur is going through the same roller coaster ride that you're going through as well. You are actually normal. And that was really liberating for me to understand that so many years ago, because it gave me the power to just be able to communicate where I was and get help before I really needed it.
And then so we're still in this informed pessimism stage, which is the downward part of our roller coaster. But we always hit the crisis of meaning, is that correct?
Yeah, you're going to always hit a crisis of meaning stage in your business. And one of the things that happens when you get there is that you're really not able to do much. You know, you're not able to get excited or plan or do work or motivate employees. And at times you'll find that the only thing you can really do is clean your filing cabinet. Well, you know what? Do it. Like, clean your filing cabinet. Clean your drawers. Throw stuff out. Purge. Because what ends up happening is a little bit of momentum starts to happen. Just even by purging and cleaning and throwing stuff out, you start feeling better because you have more space and cleanliness around you. There's actually proof around that, that if you're working in an environment that's clean and clutter-free, you're actually going to be less stressful than working in one that is full of clutter. There was a period about 6 or 7 years ago, I think it was around 2003, with 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and Brian was the founder and CEO, and I was the chief operating officer. We were extraordinarily stressed. We were very, very stressed on the business and really had no idea how we were going to build what we were trying to build, but we knew we were going to stay focused on it. And one day we kind of looked at each other and just said, you know, I'm not capable of doing anything today, and neither was Brian. And we knew we couldn't just leave the office. So we went to the storage room, and we started to clean it. And we spent about 5 hours that day cleaning the storage room. So here was the CEO and COO. At the time, we had about 140 employees at our head office and probably 1,000 employees system-wide. And we were cleaning a storage room together. We were doing that because it was the only thing we could feel good about doing. Well, when we were done, we had this immense feeling of satisfaction that allowed us to start turning around the corner the next day. And then also, don't worry about the guilt that you feel for taking some time off. You know, if you're hitting or feeling like you're hitting that burnout stage, go take some time off. Go get some exercise. Go relax. Take a vacation. Take a Friday off, and don't feel guilty about it, because no one is praising you when you're working your 120-hour weeks. So don't feel guilty about when you take some time off. We have to, as entrepreneurs, understand that we're under more stress and more workload than anybody else in the organization are, and we're allowed to take the time off. I think a lot of us in our kind of 30s, 40s, and 50s as entrepreneurs really have a built-in guilt feeling. And part of it, I think, was our parents, the way we were raised, was we were always told to work hard. I don't think it's about work hard anymore. I think it's about work smart. You know, there's an element of working hard, but it's more about working smart. And part of working smart is knowing it's time to recharge your batteries and not feel that you can go at 100 miles an hour every single second of the day. So it's okay to burn out. It's okay to take the time off. It's okay to kick back and relax so that when you're ready to go 100 miles an hour again, you have a fully recharged battery allowing you to do that.
Yeah, and then you know, some of the other things that I know you've talked about before about what not to do, one of them is stop trying to learn more. Stop trying to cram more business books and magazines into your head.
Yeah. You mentioned that just a while ago on the call. You asked if I was still on my business book diet. So when Yannick and I first met about 2 years ago, I decided that it was time for me to take a break from reading business books. And I decided at the time to take a one-year break, and I wasn't going to read a single business book for 12 months. And it was really powerful. I did a lot of reading. I read a lot of great books, read a lot for fun. But I just decided that what was happening with all these business books was they were overwhelming me with two things. Every time I read a book, it gave me a list of things that I should be doing for my business that I wasn't doing already. And the second thing it did is it beat me up emotionally and made me feel like I wasn't doing as good a job as I could be doing. So by taking a break and kind of stopping the insanity for a year, it allowed my brain to relax. And it felt so good that at the end of 12 months, I decided to go for a second 12 months. And this is not because I feel like I know it all, far from it. It was just because I needed to just take a break. So while I was building the rest of my business and executing on what I knew I needed to do, I decided to take a break from getting stressed out by reading what all these experts were telling me I should be doing as well. So I went 2 years without a single business book, and it was fantastic. And now what I've decided to do is I'll read five fun books and then one business book. And then five fun books and one business book. So I'm going to edge back into it slowly. But it's been great to have that break as well. I'm not feeling guilty about it.
All right, so we're at this stage of hopefully we're rounding up and now going back up again instead of into the crash and burn stage, which really you're pretty much done, right? I mean, that's bankruptcy, forced sale, and it's not a spot we want to be. So now stage five is informed optimism again.
Yeah, so what happens is you come around the bottom of this crisis of meaning stage and you hit a new stage, which is called informed, or actually before you hit informed optimism, you hit hopeful realism or hopeful realization. And that's the part, that's kind of like the little engine that could. That's when the train gets to that stage and thinks, I think I can. And that's when you start feeling a little bit better as an entrepreneur, but the key is to understand is that you're not quite there yet. So it's good that you're feeling better, it's good that you're not stressed, but it's important to recognize that it's not over yet, right? You could still come sliding backwards off the curve if you're not careful. You need to know for sure that you're okay. Again, I always use the analogy of going to a marriage counselor and having one session and coming out of that and going, we're perfect now. Well, no, you're not. You need to go to a marriage counselor until you're sick of seeing the marriage counselor. At that point, then you know that your marriage is good because you're now sick of seeing the counselor. The same with your business. You need to land multiple new deals. You need to hire multiple new great employees. You can't just hire one and think everything's changed, or you can't just land one big deal. In fact, I had a franchisee years ago who called me up, had been at crisis of meaning, thinking he was going bankrupt for months, landed a big commercial job, all excited, thought everything was going to be fantastic. And I kept cautioning him. I said, be careful. Like, you got to go out and keep working and keep doing the marketing. And he was convinced that everything was fine now. Sure enough, 6 weeks later, his client didn't pay. So all of a sudden, here's this guy who ignored everything else, didn't know for sure that he was okay, and crashed off the curve in the opposite direction.
That makes sense. We'll talk about, you know, one of the things I know that when you've presented this before, and it's been incredibly well received by some really high caliber groups like YPO and EO groups, and, you know, I think you spoke at MIT on this, I can't remember, but spouses and came up and thanked you for it. What's that all about, or how can we relay this information to the people around us that we care about?
Sure. It's actually one of the reasons why I created my DVD on this, was to take all the same information I just gave you. I have not left anything out, but to take all this information and be able to let our employees understand why entrepreneurs ride this up and down roller coaster, and to let our spouse, either our husband or our wife or even our kids, let them understand why we're riding this manic up and down roller coaster. I've seen entrepreneurs give it to their parents so that their 60 and 70-year-old parents who helped fund the enterprise understand that their kid is actually normal in going through this. You know, often an entrepreneur does not have entrepreneurial people around them, and they silently live in fear that we're crazy. They're terrified that, you know, yesterday you thought everything was perfect and today you think we're going bankrupt. Like, what's wrong with you? Well, the reality is nothing's wrong with us. It's just being an entrepreneur. And we're allowed to change our minds and our feelings. It's kind of why we think out loud. So the first time I ever saw a spouse really get this, I was actually speaking at the Berkshire Hathaway event in Omaha, Nebraska. And one of the guys in the audience watching me speak was Tim Ferriss, who wrote The 4-Hour Workweek. And Tim came up to me afterwards, and he's like, dude, that was profound, like really, really profound. It had a really big impact on him. And he asked me to put a copy of some of my content up on his blog. About 2 minutes after he talked to me, this woman walked up, and she was crying. And I said, what's wrong? And she said, nothing. She said, I think you might have just saved my marriage. And I said, what are you talking about? And she said, well, my husband has been an entrepreneur for 10 years. He's a very successful YPO member. But I haven't understood why he goes through this up and down like he does, and now I think I understand. She said, I actually don't think I'll ever be nervous or ever worried again because I understand it's just part of it being an entrepreneur. She said, I always thought he was crazy. I had another entrepreneur come up to me after teaching it at MIT about a year ago, very successful, $30 million business, makes about $5 million in profit, and he came up to me after after my talk, and he said, I think I might have just saved his life. He had felt suicidal for weeks because he was no longer passionate about his business and he was no longer excited about what he was doing, and he couldn't figure out why. And this gave him the comfort to just say, you know what, it's okay to not be passionate anymore. It's okay to move to the next stage.
And so if we find ourselves at that stage we don't have the passion and you've got, you know, that's that either the, I guess, the crisis of meaning stage, and I actually feel like I've been there before. What do you suggest that people are going to ride it out and then they're going to get excited again about the same business, or is it time to make a transition?
Well, I think what the most important part that I learned with it is that you want to make decisions when you're at moments of clarity. And the times that you're most at those moments of clarity are either at informed pessimism or informed optimism. That's when you should be and can be making, you know, business or life-changing decisions that involve clarity. If you're at periods of mania, you know, the uninformed optimism, or if you're at periods of high extraordinary stress or depression, like the crisis of meaning, you don't want to be making big decisions at that point. So once you come out of that period of stress and depression, and you come over to the period of informed optimism, then at that point you're able to make a decision as to what to do with your business going forward.
All right, perfect. And then is there a way, Cameron, to move either quickly from stage to stage, or is there a way to prolong a stage that you want to be in?
Wow, good question. Is there a way to prolong a stage? I don't know. I do know that there's certainly a way to slowly flatten your curves out a little bit.
Okay, so less high, less low.
Yeah, to go less high and less low, and that's really when you start becoming more cognizant of the feelings that you're having. You know, if you feel like you're wound up, then you start getting more exercise and de-stressing. I actually wrote a note to Brian, the founder of 1-800-GOT-JUNK, about an hour ago, and I was laughing about in the early days how he and I would both get so manic. And we would literally grab the other person and say, hey, let's go for a walk. And all we would do is take the other person and go for a walk around the building once, just to allow us to catch our breath, slow it down, start to think calmly again. Often you try to support people when they're stressed, but the opportunity is to also support people when they're, you know, in that period of uninformed optimism as well, because it can be just as dangerous then as it can be at the stressful periods.
Perfect. All right. Well, I think we covered a whole lot here. What else do we need to hit on that we missed?
I guess it's first, you know, it's normal. I guess to recap, it's normal to go through these transitions. We're not crazy. It's normal to feel the stress. It's normal to feel the mania. It's important to recognize that you are feeling what you're feeling and to communicate those feelings to people. It's important to let them sink into yourself so that you know what to be doing and what not to be doing at each of the stages. It's important to know that if you feel like you're getting more and more stressed, that's the time to really start communicating it quickly to people, to start building out your support group. You will get through it. You're not alone, and so many other people have gone through this stuff. I think that's what a true mentor is someone who's been there before. You know, a coach is someone who's going to ask you lots of questions, and a consultant is someone who's going to do the work for you. But a mentor is someone who's been there and done that, and they've already gone through what you're going to go through. So it's turning to those people and soliciting their thoughts and their feedback and knowing that you're going to get through it as well.
The first stage, the uninformed optimism, is obviously pretty alluring. And I guess is that why so many entrepreneurs like that startup feeling, and maybe that's why they bounce from project to project?
Yeah, it's one of the reasons we bounce from project to project is because we like that adrenaline rush. It's also one of the reasons why so few people can be entrepreneurs. If you think of one of the greatest fears is to stand up in front of a group, entrepreneurs need to do that all the time. So few people like to sell. Entrepreneurs love to sell, most of us. And the reality is if we can learn to leverage those periods of uninformed optimism, that's when people get excited and will do anything we ask them to do or do anything we're suggesting. You think about anybody who started any of the internet companies so many years back, it was all of that enthusiasm and excitement that got people to follow. There was a really funny interview that Bill Gross, who started Idealab, did with Fortune magazine. And the Fortune magazine editor said, I believed him because I was dazzled by him. And he had this infectious, boyish enthusiasm that was charming and irresistible. He spoke so rapidly, jumping from topic to topic, like he was hyperlinking his conversations. It was just so hard to keep up with him, but he had so much energy and seemed like he was on the verge of jumping out of his skin that I had to believe him. Well, that's someone who's in a manic stage. And here's a Fortune magazine editor apologizing for buying into these ideas that Bill Gross had been communicating. So, that's something that's really attractive to us.
All right, perfect. Well, I think that's pretty darn good, and I just I'm glad you were able to take the time out today to do this, because it's especially important for entrepreneurs at any stage to realize where they are and the fact that all of this is normal and can really help us from almost making sure that we don't become our own personal train wreck because we don't realize what's going on. The one thing that I did want to share with people, and like I mentioned at the beginning of the call, you've been a business coach of mine for a while now. I love that. I don't know if you have any spots open or not, but one thing that you have done, and you haven't done a very good job of getting it out there, but you have these resources available for entrepreneurs, especially with fast growth companies, these DVDs. Where can people find those?
Sure. If they go to my website, which is backpocketcoo.com, I've created a series of four DVDs. One is on the emotional roller coaster that we just talked about. The second is on the easy steps to generate free press or free media. Over the last 20 years, I've helped generate just over 5,000 stories for companies, and it's all of the systems on how to generate free press for your company. So that's the second DVD. The third one is called Leadership at 100 Miles an Hour, and those are all the systems that we use to grow College Pro Painters and Boyd Auto Body and 1-800 Got Junk. And the systems that are there that any entrepreneur can grow from, two people to 200 people. And they're easily implementable systems that anybody can put in place. So it's kind of like you can rip them off and run with them because I borrowed those systems from the best companies on the planet. And then the fourth DVD is on building a world-class culture. We were ranked as the number two company in all of Canada to work for. So I give you the systems that you need to take a company and build a cultural magnet, a place that people really want to come and work. So, you go to backpocketcoo.com and you go to the Success Tools page and you can get the DVDs there.
Cool. And I suggest those DVDs, even if you don't want to grow your company to $100 million, but, you want to be a good-sized seven-figure business or even, six-figure or multiple seven figures, it's well worth it to get that for yourself, for your team. And Cameron is very modest about his accomplishments, modest about his resources available, but I think that it's well worth checking out, and I don't get a penny for it. Just go check him out. So I just really believe in what Cameron's doing. So with that, I guess unless you have any last words of inspiration here.
No, I just kind of remembered, though, I guess you keep saying I'm understated. My blog is actually getting some pretty good traffic now as well. People are learning a lot from the blog, and it's not there to try to sell you anything more. It's just there to try to help entrepreneurs. So if any of you do want to learn, you can learn for free. There's lessons come out there every couple of days. So just go to the website again and sign up for the blog, and you can learn that way as well.
Yeah,
thanks very much for having me.
Yeah, so it's BackpocketCOO. It's like having a COO in your back pocket. So backpocketcoo.com and check out the stuff there. Cameron, thanks a lot. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. If you found some value out of it, please shoot us an email. We'd love to hear your comments. So we'll be sending you a recording when it's available. Thanks, Cameron.
Yannick, you obviously continue to blow me away. Like, well over 1,000 people on this call. I don't know how you do it, man. So you have built quite an audience. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. We had 1,000 plus registered, and we only had a couple hundred lines. So I think the rest are going to grab it all on the recording. So we'll see what happens. But hopefully we'll spread this message far and wide for you.
Yeah, send me a link to the recording, too, because I had some people asking to get a copy of it.
Okay, perfect.
Thanks,
Ron. All right, guys. Have a great night. Take care.
Bye-bye.